From high atop Bronson Towers in Studio 1B in the heart of the high desert of Placitas, New Mexico, this is The Matthew Bronson Show. Welcome. As the man said, this is The Matthew Bronson Show on KUPR 99.9 in the high desert of Placitas, New Mexico. Today in studio for a special audio and video version of The Matthew Bronson Show, Ron McFarlane.
Thank you.
Did I get that correct?
You did.
Because for months I've been saying McFarlane.
Which is also fine with me.
Okay. Well, what would your parents prefer?
Probably McFarlane.
Okay. And that is Irish?
Irish Scottish? And Scottish, I believe. One or the other, probably both mixed together.
They don't historically get along very well, do they?
They do in my family.
Okay. Did you have one of each?
I'm not one that has really researched the background of the family, so I can't really say any more than what the oldest living relative says about our history. So I think there's Scottish and Irish in there somewhere.
You are a lutist.
Yes, or lutenist.
Lutenist.
I kind of prefer lutineer myself.
Okay.
I'd like to put that forward. But back in the old days, back about 400 years ago, the queen had luters in her employ. It's L-E-W-T-E-R. So luters, lutenist, lutineers, it's all the same thing.
Which queen would this be?
That would be Queen Elizabeth I.
Of England.
Of England, that's right.
To that point, you travel not only the United States, but all around the world doing this.
Yes, mostly in North America, but yes, I've played in England, Scotland, and in Europe.
And how are you received in England and Scotland, since it's more of a homebrew instrument?
Very well, in fact. Years ago, the Baltimore Consort, a Renaissance group that I play with, played our Scottish program at the Glasgow Early Music Festival. And we sort of wondered if we were bringing country music. It was like bringing country music to Nashville from a Bulgarian group or something like that.
Which has probably happened.
It probably has, and they probably play it really well. But we were a little nervous about bringing Scottish music to Scotland and assuming that we knew how to play it. But we were very warmly received. It was
now, great. Is there a rock star lutist in that part of the world?
Not particularly. There are a number of very accomplished players in that part of the world, in England and Scotland.
Right.
But no one that I would call a rock star.
But no Jennifer Lopez of the lute in its native country.
We're still waiting for that.
That could be a problem. And that gets me to a question of not why lute, when did you say, hey, Mom and Dad, I want a lute, and then they took you to the guidance counselor, or what what happened?
Well, I started out at the beginning of my teens on guitar. I was just enthused about rock music, like millions of other teenagers. So I learned guitar, and besides rock guitar, I got interested in classical guitar, and in fact got a degree in classical guitar. I always loved rock music. I always loved classical music. Side by side, I would be studying classical guitar in a conservatory, and then my weekend job would be playing in a rock band, or my summer job would be playing in a rock band. And with the lute, which has a heritage that combines elements of classical music and elements of folk music and popular music, I found a kind of music that blended the qualities that I love about classical music, which is the depth, the complexity, and the lyricism, with the things that I loved about rock music, which was the chance for on-the-spot improvisation, to have tremendous amount of rhythmic vitality and drive, and a sort of directness of expression. So in the lute, I found the things that I loved about both playing electric guitar and playing classical guitar. So
this is late 60s, early 70s?
By the time I switched to lute, it was 1978. So I already had a degree in guitar, and I was starting to work on a master's in guitar, but the lute really drew me away from that.
And who were the rock people that you were playing?
Oh, the people that nowadays are called classic rock.
Right.
I was very enthusiastic about Jimi Hendrix, about Led Zeppelin, about the Beatles.
And that's the kind of band you played in?
Yes, it was a cover band. We played covers of all those, you know, Rolling Stones and all the bands that were popular in the mid-70s.
You ever tried to do Foxy Lady on the lute?
Not in public.
I'll take that as a yes. I think a rock lute band would be kind of cool.
You know, a band that I play in called Earhart is probably about the closest thing you'll come to that. Earhart has the idea of combining lute with modern instruments. And in fact, we play music that I've written for the lute. We sometimes have vocals, sometimes it's just instrumental. But we'll have a drum set, we'll have fretless electric bass, and lute. Our bass player also doubles on electric violin. And a lot of that music has as much in common with rock music as it has with classical music. And it's just a way of seeing the lute as a contemporary instrument, an instrument for the future, as well as an instrument of the past and of museums.
Right. I know for myself, when I was very young, like maybe third grade, I saw The Music Man. And I instantly said, I want to play the trombone.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a moment like that where you said, I don't think I knew at third grade what a lute was. But how did that come into your consciousness of that the lute existed?
I did have a certain moment when I got into music and got into guitar. And that was in eighth grade when a band of my classmates were playing the Surfaris hit Wipeout in the school cafeteria. And I went, whoa, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
Sure.
And I had to get a guitar. And from then on, I was on fire about music. Now, jumping forward to being enthusiastic about the lute, that kind of came more slowly. My classical guitar repertoire was filling up with more and more Renaissance and Baroque music. Music that originally had been lute music, then transcribed for guitar. And that was becoming my favorite music to play on guitar. And I just had a special resonance for that music that went beyond what I felt for 19th and 20th century music.
So the first time you saw a lute, you were already pretty accomplished in the guitar.
I was. I think the first time I heard a lute was a Julian Bream concert in the 1970s. And at that time, he was dividing his concerts between playing Renaissance lute in the first half. Then after intermission, he would switch to classical guitar and play that for the second
And that's
half.
What I know him for, is the classical guitar.
Absolutely.
So when you saw the lute, did you go, holy moly, there's like, 400 strings on there?
Well, there are a lot of strings, but the strings are doubled the way you have on a 12-string guitar. So when I play a string, except for the first string, the treble string, which is single, I'm always playing two strings together. So while I have 19 strings on this instrument, I think of it as 10, because I have a single string and then 9 pairs of strings, which are each tuned in unison pairs or in the bass tuned in octave pairs. So it's a little like playing a 10-string guitar. Even so, the first 6 pair are the main playing strings that I finger with the left hand. And then the lower bass strings, which are physically higher, closer to the ceiling, those are played as open strings with the thumb.
Okay.
So it's not quite as complex as it might seem at first glance.
Is there a Suzuki book for mandolin?
For lute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, there is no such Suzuki book, but there are books for beginners, and there are loads of podcasts and places on YouTube that you can go to find out the basics of playing lute. There is a Lute Society of America, and they have a website with wonderful materials that could get a beginner started.
How many members do they have?
I think it's under 1,000.
Okay.
Somewhere between 500.
So it's a very select group.
That's a very diplomatic way of putting it, yes. So we are few.
400 years ago, when the lute was, I guess, being used by royalty, what was it, a modification to a pre-existing instrument? I mean, who's the grandfather or grandmother of the lute?
That would be the Arabic oud. Now, the oud has existed for well over 1,000 years in the Middle East, and I'm not sure how far back in history it goes. But around 800 to 1,000 years ago, when crusaders went to the Middle East, fought their battles, and brought back basically souvenirs of their...
Gold, I think, was the purpose.
They brought back Arabic ouds. And the oud, which has the same outward shape as the lute, with this pear-shaped body, a rounded back, and a peg box that bends back at a right angle.
What is that called?
That's a peg box.
Oh, peg box.
That's the part where you tune the lute.
Sure.
The oud had all of those things, but fewer strings. And it caught on in medieval Europe. The Europeans gradually evolved it into a separate instrument that they called the lute. Even the sound oud and lute are kind of close to one another.
Yes.
And gradually the Europeans changed it, added more strings, added frets. The oud didn't have frets. In fact, it does not have frets to this day. And evolved an independent repertory that was suited for Europeans.
Is oud music what we would think of Middle Eastern music, or is it lute-type music?
It is what you think of as Middle Eastern music, and there are tremendous oud virtuosos out there, tremendously poignant and virtuosic players
of
that music.
When we're done, I'm going straight to YouTube and look up oudists.
Oh, you must. You must.
Not nudists, but oudists. You never know what Google's going to give you. The peg box is at a 90-degree angle towards the performer. Why not?
See that.
Why not like real guitars?
Well, I think running the strings over this right angle stabilizes the tuning and actually stabilizes the peg box as well, because you're bringing the tension, rather you're pulling together this piece of wood that is the peg box with the piece of wood that is the neck of the instrument. I've even seen instruments that were broken here, but were still playable because they were held together by the tension of the strings. So I think it's a very sound engineering decision to make this right angle.
The
oud had that and continues to have that as well.
Now, let's talk about lutes. Is there and we have been talking about lutes, but we'll continue. Is there a Stradivarius of lutes?
Probably Lax Mahler, who was a builder in the 16th century, would be the closest thing to a Stradivarius.
Is that German?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And his lutes were prized a couple hundred years after his time. But unlike violins, lutes don't last for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. His instruments lasted maybe 150, 200 years. And so by the Baroque time, in the 18th century, his lutes built in the 16th century were highly prized. But there are only a few of them that still remain today, and they're in museums and are no longer playable.
Is that because of the composition of the material that's used?
And the structure of the lute as well. With a violin, you have a carved top that's thicker and also supported by soundpost. The lute has extremely thin surfaces. There's no soundpost, and it's just inherently a more delicate instrument.
Is it all the back? It's like an avocado that you cut down the middle.
Yes, exactly.
And there are ribs on it. Are those individual pieces of wood?
Yes, and in this case, these are rosewood ribs, and you have several ribs all glued side to side to create this bowl shape.
And does there have to be a certain number of ribs to be an official lute?
No. In fact, some lutes have fewer and some have more ribs. Some have as few as 9, Some might have as few, as many as 30 or 40 ribs.
So is that called a nine-rib lute? Or
I'm not even sure how many this one has.
No, but how are they, when you go into the, Lutes R Us, mm-hmm. what do you ask for?
To tell you the truth, I don't pay a lot of attention to the number of ribs. I prefer fewer ribs because I think they tend to be more resonant. But what I'll pay more attention to is the soundboard and the number of courses or pairs of strings on the lute.
Now, the sound hole, I'm sure that's musically, technically
correct. Oh, that's fine. And it's called a rose on a lute.
Because the name of the guitar is just open.
Right.
That rose will be the same pattern on every lute?
No. In fact, each lute builder back in the old days would have his own rose. And in fact, there are many different patterns used for
like a coat of arms or a tartan.
I suppose something like that.
So is that attributed to a particular person?
It is, although I don't remember which which builder this is from.
Right.
But it's from an historical pattern.
And I noticed that there is no bridge like on a violin.
You have a bridge, but you have no bridge saddle. Rather, the strings are just tied right in here, right into the bridge holes, as opposed to going over the bridge and then being tied to the end of the lute.
And is that a strap hook on the end?
Yes, so I can stand and play the lute standing if I wish to.
Okay, I think sitting's more comfortable.
It is, and plus the lute is more stable. I can play with more security this way.
Can you give us a little sampling of what it will do? We'll get into individual pieces later, but let's hear a lute.
Sure.
Obviously beautiful. I immediately noticed a reverb type sound, and you're not plugged into a reverb amp.
That's right.
So is that because of the shape?
No, I think it's because of all the extra strings in the bass, which ring sympathetically. They're not sympathetic strings. That is, they're not on the lute in order to provide that quality of sound. But they can't help but ring in sympathy to the higher notes. So if I have a C, and you can hear, even though that note is stopped, this bass note here, trying to find it, but it is ringing sympathetically to that note.
Which of the science folks in our audience know about sympathetic vibration?
Yes.
Excuse me. I'm looking at your music upside down here, and so there are essentially 10 notes you can play, because of the pairs and all that.
Right. 10 open strings to play.
So if you're on a six-string guitar or a violin, I guess what I'm getting at is there's got to be a lot of music there if you have 10 potential strings at once.
Yes, but you tend to finger only the first six pairs. The bass strings are played as open strings, and they're ordinarily just indicated as ledger lines below a six-line staff. So I have a six-line staff of lute tablature, which is very similar to modern guitar tablature. It just shows you where to put your fingers rather than directly representing the notes. So it's it doesn't really look that complicated on the page. It just shows you where to put your fingers, and the extra low bass strings, if you have any, are indicated with ledger lines.
Now, going back to your life path from rock and roll star to you decided to go to college for music.
Yes.
Was there a second choice? Did you want to be a dentist? Or
no. I mean, long before I got into music, I was especially interested in science. I was interested in astronomy. But at age 13, I had no thoughts of doing anything but music. I was just on fire with enthusiasm for music. It was more fun than anything I could think of to do.
Girls?
I was interested in girls, of course. And it was not the path to popularity that many
maybe.
People might assume it to be.
I wouldn't think of a lute as a chick magnet.
Well, that's very
maybe
true.
Maybe in Ireland. And do you come from a musical family?
No, I come from a family of teachers. Though my mother played piano and sang for fun, and there was always music in the house, I don't come from a family of professional musicians.
I mean, we had a lot of music in the house, and I had an educator and a government worker. And when I expressed interest in music as a career, that wasn't received very well.
I see.
So I guess you had better parents.
I don't know about better, but they were tremendously supportive. They were interested in my being happy and in doing something that felt fulfilling.
Well, and being similar generations, I mean, my parents were Depression babies.
Right.
So I think they were thinking in terms of career in being able to provide, and certainly a dentist or something.
Absolutely. And my parents also mentioned, well, I don't think you'll probably make very much money at that. Nevertheless, never opposed any of my choices, playing guitar or even playing the lead.
You'd already shown
on.
An aptitude by being in bands that
yes.
worked. I mean, you could have said, Mom, Dad, I want to be a stand-up comedian. And that probably they may not have supported as much as music.
That would have been a challenge. I don't know what that would have been like.
So how did you decide where to go to school?
I went to Shenandoah Conservatory to begin with, partly because I felt comfortable with that part of the world. It's in Northern Virginia, a lot of countryside, and I visited the campus and liked it very much. Also, my music teacher in high school recommended it. And my only other thought was Peabody Conservatory, which I did attend later on. But because it was located in downtown Baltimore, I wasn't really very interested in living in downtown Baltimore at the time.
I can't.
And so I chose Shenandoah, which is where I got my undergraduate. That's in Winchester, Virginia.
And what city did you grow up in?
I grew up in Ellicott City, Maryland, which is actually just west or just southwest of Baltimore.
It is the eastern shore of Maryland. It was, I remember growing up, it was Agnew territory.
Oh, yes.
Very, very conservative. But a beautiful, beautiful part of the country and the world.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, you could get oysters and blue crabs all the time.
You could. That's true.
So do you go back often? Or?
Well, in fact, I still have the house that I grew up in. After my parents passed away, I kept the house in Maryland. Then I also live officially just outside of Portland, Oregon. So I have a home near each coast. And in fact, because I travel and play music for a living, having an East Coast and a West Coast landing place.
So the East Coast one, it's still it's a living house. It's not.
Absolutely.
It didn't go Airbnb.
It did not.
Boy, that's two different mindsets, Ellicott City and Portland, you know, super conservative, super liberal. That's different, you know, to spend time in both.
Mm-hmm.
Probably keeps you on your toes.
Yes.
When you grew up, excuse me, in the Eastern Shore of Maryland, or now when you're back there, are there local pubs, bars, whatever, where you can just go and open mic night and go and play the lute?
You know, there is an open mic in Ellicott City that I've gone to play lute a couple of times.
And how do they like it?
Well, it's an absolute novelty to them.
Sure.
Because mostly it's singer-songwriters playing their acoustic guitars. So, but just for fun, I've gone a handful of times, and they love it. It's just completely different from what they've experienced. And for the most part, I'm not playing Renaissance music at those occasions, but rather new music that I've composed for the lute.
In what genre is your music? Well, can you give us a sampling of an original?
Sure, sure. Here's a bit of one called Cathedral Cave, and the genres that I write in are pretty varied, but this one is, I guess, a little bit impressionistic. Just stop right there. It goes
super.
On.
And it's a good opportunity to remind everyone that you're listening to Matthew Bronson Show on KUPR 99.9 in beautiful Placitas, New Mexico. Ron, have you been to Placitas before? Or?
Not that I can recall. I don't think so. I've played in New Mexico a number of times with the Baltimore Consort. I don't remember that we were in Placitas.
But you've been up in Santa Fe or Santa
yes,
Fe and
yes,
down in Albuquerque. Yeah. This is different, isn't it?
It is. This is beautiful.
I'm just
pulled over by it.
And the population density is wonderful. You know, it's like one
yes.
house for 5 acres.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets kind of scary at night because we don't have any streetlights or anything. But
yeah.
Now, you were playing up in Santa Fe yesterday.
Yes, last night.
And how was that?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I loved it. It was more of a small club last night, and the lute was amplified by a tremendous small sound system and just a hi-fi quality. So even though the club was small, it was a little bit amplified, and that meant that I could play the most delicate things, you know, just a bare wisp of a sound, and still that sound would be in everyone's laps, and they could hear it very, very well. Now, what I loved about that is it kind of goes back to the 17th century when they said, the lute will suffer but few hearers, two or three at most. Even the sound of a mouse is a hindrance. So basically, the relatively small audience, I had probably fewer than 40 in the audience last night, it was as if I was playing for each one individually because of the excellent sound system. Back in the old days, I think you were supposed to listen to the lute very close up and have the intimate experience, perhaps listening to it late at night when all the sounds of a city would die down.
See, I'm thinking of, because you had said royalty had their own lutists.
Yes, they had.
And I've seen it on Travel Channel and National Geographic, so it's got to be true. You know, these huge venues inside the castle and it's far from quiet. You know, there's the tankards of ale and everybody's making a bunch of noise. And then there's the person performing.
Yes.
So I can't believe everything I see on TV.
Well, maybe not. There was one lutenist back in the old days named Jacques Gauthier. And he was said to he played so thunderously on the lute that you could hear him in a tavern.
Wow.
That was what they said. But ordinarily, the lute was a very quiet instrument. Their idea of a good instrument, of a cultivated instrument, was not one that was loud, but rather one that plays at about a normal conversational volume. The louder instruments were thought to be coarse by comparison, and they were kept outside. They were the outdoor instruments. The lute was the indoor instrument. Lutes also played in the private bedchambers of kings and queens, and of course it was very quiet there. And because musicians, lute players in particular, had access to monarchs and the high political figures of their day, they were sometimes cultivated as spies back in the 16th and 17th centuries because they were in that rare position to be able to overhear conversations from the king and or queen and their people. So yeah. Sometimes they were accused of being spies, sometimes they were spies. But that was a part of the intrigue back in the day.
And then when you were in conservatory, did you have to elect that lute is going to be my primary instrument?
No, I actually dropped out of Peabody Conservatory, proud Peabody dropout.
Sure.
I dropped out of the classical guitar program there in order to take up the lute. I considered going back to that with a lute major. In fact, they were just beginning to offer a lute major at the time. But I was already playing with the Baltimore Consort and performing, so I realized I was already doing what I wanted to be able to do once I graduated as a lute major.
Certainly.
So you don't really need a diploma before you get on stage as a license to play publicly. So I did not get a degree in the lute, but rather I studied with some of the great minds and players of the day. And I actually studied quite a long time with the lute teacher there at Peabody, who I would have been studying with had I enrolled.
Yeah, I mean, long, long time ago, you barely had anyone to teach you.
Right.
It would be more difficult to practice law without a law degree.
Indeed. Indeed, yes.
So at what point did you transition from a student to a performer? Did you go, I need to find a group that's going to pay me?
I was very fortunate because my first lute teacher was also the founder of the Baltimore Consort. I've been playing with Baltimore Consort for 40 years, starting this season. And it's been a tremendous education and a source of income as well. And because I was a beginning lute student, he was interested in my playing another instrument, the cittern in Baltimore Consort. Now that's a wire-strung plucked instrument.
Right.
Where while I was a beginner on the lute and learning the right hand technique, I was already pretty accomplished on the guitar and I had the coordination with the left hand to be able to play the cittern and just to play it with a pick. So as I was learning the lute, even as a beginner, I was already performing with the Baltimore Consort, which was a professional ensemble.
It was a paid gig.
Just getting started. So I was able to learn and perform simultaneously. And then eventually my teacher decided to move to Europe, and I became the lute player of Baltimore Consort since
that's
then.
That's one way to do it. The the arts, I think, are notorious for being difficult to eke a living out of. Lute, especially hard?
It is especially hard. I think because there's no ready-made large niche for the instrument. The popularity of early music is a tremendous help. The fact that people are interested in classical guitar and, by extension, interested in lute music because guitarists play lute music, that's a tremendous help as well. But going into it, it's much harder to find interest in public concerts compared with guitar or violin or piano. On the other hand, you don't have the same degree of competition that you have on the piano or the violin. But I would say it takes a fair amount of imagination and persistence to make a career out of performing on the lute.
So does
in fact, I do make a living performing, not in teaching.
Did you ever get to the point where you or your family said, "Oh, get a job. You know, we're not paying the mortgage," or, you know, "Bobby needs a new pair of shoes." Did you ever get to that point?
I've had times where it felt like it was touch and go, but I never had anyone, my wife or parents or family, say, "It's time to hang that up."
Right. Or the bank.
Or the bank.
So that's super
fortunately, I've not been in debt and have been able to keep things together somehow, raising a family and supporting it by playing this instrument.
That you're super lucky.
Very lucky, yes.
And can I assume that this is kind of a I'm going to say a solo type gig, but you do perform with a singer and a flautist and all that, but you're not going to be, I mean, do you ever back up you're the soloist with an orchestra?
Occasionally, not often, but occasionally. There are some concertos, for instance, Vivaldi wrote two concertos for lute with strings, and I've performed them a number of times, recorded them as well. I do a number of things. I play solo recitals. I play flute and lute duos with a Renaissance and Baroque flute player.
Right.
I play lute duets with another lute player. I play with the Baltimore Consort, and I play with Earhart, which I mentioned earlier.
Right.
So there's a number of...
Which is a voice and a flute. Earhart.
Earhart is lute, percussion, and bass.
Bass, okay.
Or fretless electric bass.
Oh, I was here. I should remember. Would you like to give us another sampling of a different kind of style?
Sure. Why don't I switch over to the Baroque lute now?
Okay.
So this is an 18th century style lute. Instead of the 19 strings that I had earlier, this is a 24-string lute. And those 24 strings are arranged into 13 courses. And the tuning also is completely different. I have the open strings tuned F, D, A, F, D, A. So I have an open D minor chord. Then below that, the bass strings are tuned to a diatonic descending scale. So it goes right down the scale. All those bass notes are always played as open strings with the thumb. They're very rarely stopped with the left hand.
And for the non-musicians in the audience, what is diatonic?
Diatonic,
is that the Greek god of music? Or?
Yes, diatonic would be, say, all the white keys on a keyboard without playing the sharps and flats.
Right, okay.
And I'll play an 18th century piece by Bach. And Bach, in fact, did write a little bit for the lute. He transcribed one of his cello suites also for the lute. I've transcribed another cello suite of his.
Now, we don't have to say Bach.
Bach. I'm
You're more of a Bach guy.
I'm a Bach guy, not a Bach guy. Let's see where we are. So there's just a little bit of a prelude of Bach's.
It's totally different.
Very different, yes.
Totally beautiful. You probably no surprise to you. You've won me over. I'm a lute enthusiast now.
I'm glad to hear it.
This is now, as far as this particular instrument, it's the aspect ratio is different. It's longer.
It is longer. You have a longer string length, and you have more of the sound of the various strings ringing through one another to create a sort of carillon effect. And that's what they were going for in the 17th and 18th century. They're looking for this very rich sound of the strings. You were saying earlier that it sounds as if you have reverb
yes.
on the other lute. With this one, you have even more.
and the rose, the sound hole.
Oh, yes.
Is the same. I mean, it's a rose. It's not open.
Indeed, that's right. That lutes were always that way, and I don't think it makes an impact in the way it sounds. It was just a tradition to decorate lutes that way, and also guitars back in the very old days.
Certainly,
that also had roses in the 16th and 17th centuries.
So, when you pick up a piece of music, does it indicate which version of instrument you're supposed to use?
Not always, but once you start in the music, it becomes apparent what you need.
So you know.
Yeah, right. That's right.
You're very successful. I mean, you have CDs, you tour. How many gigs a year do you play?
Oh, close to 100.
Is there a lutist that you go, like the Pavarotti of opera, I want to get to that level?
I think my favorite lute player alive nowadays is Paul Odet. And in fact, I play duets with him. We play lute duets of Italian and English music. So he has been, I think, my favorite lute player for a good 40 years now. And okay. I feel very lucky to get to play with him also.
Sure.
Because not only is he a great colleague, but you always learn from someone that you're associating with. And even though I'm not specifically getting lessons, almost by osmosis, when you're with another musician, you pick up their energy, you pick up the essence of the way they are and the way they play. Right. And so that's a great treat for me.
Certainly. And now, as you say, you're learning just by performing with him. Do you listen or play with him and go, God, I wish I could do that the way he does it?
Yeah, sometimes. Absolutely.
And how many, working lutists, are there more than 100 that are making a living at it right now?
I would say no. And in fact, I cannot think of another lute player who just performs and doesn't teach. It's pretty universal that all lute players, at least all that I can think of, have some sort of university or conservatory position. And that's the basis for their income. And then they might perform in addition to that. And most of the world's best lute players are doing that. I taught at Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore for 10 years in the late 1980s and early 90s. And while I enjoyed it, it just was not my life's calling, especially classroom teaching.
Right.
I enjoy private teaching. I enjoy doing workshops and getting together with people when I'm on the road, doing hit and run teaching,
master classes.
Absolutely, yeah. I enjoy all of that. But the week to week classroom teaching, it just didn't feel like what I was built for.
Sure.
But I enjoy traveling. I do very much enjoy teaching, and playing for folks.
Well, most performers you hear say life on the road is hard. You know, one night in a hotel, the Holiday Inn is a Holiday Inn is a Holiday Inn. You can't even really appreciate that I'm in Paris. So although you probably would appreciate being in Paris, but maybe not being in Boulder.
No question.
Yeah. And even from a student perspective, many people will take like piano because they think it rounds out their education.
Right.
If you're taking lute, you got to want to take lute. You're not there with one foot in. Yeah. I would think you'd have to be pretty serious about it, and you get a more interested student.
Absolutely. I think the people who take up the lute are generally very passionate about it, partly because it's not that easy to get a lute. You can't just walk into your usual guitar center or the local music store and find lutes on the wall, pick one up, and off you go. They're hard to find. You can find them, in fact, for rent through the Lute Society of America, and they're easier to get now than they've ever been. But it does take more of an effort, and I think people who do manage to get hold of an instrument and get started tend to have a more intense interest in it than your typical music student.
It's not an Amazon item.
I think it is. I think there are lutes on Amazon.
So you said that they don't last as long as violins and guitars.
Yeah.
Have you worn one out, or is it just
no? In fact, when I say they don't last 100, I mean they don't last 400 years. But those Locke smaller lutes lasted 200 years. So All the lutes that I have will last my lifetime and beyond.
Do you have your eye on one someplace? It's like, once I get a spare $500,000, I'm going to buy this lute.
You know, it's a sort of lute player's disease that we always want one more. But frankly, I have all the instruments that I need. There are other instruments in my imagination that I might like to get hold of. But I have seven instruments, and more than I can take on the road with me. I generally can't take more than two. And I'm very much like the instruments I have.
Do you, when you're packing your clothes for the trip, do you go, all right, this lute is going, and this lute is going because of the program you're performing?
Exactly, that's it. For instance, on the tour I'm on now, I need a Baroque lute because I'm playing Bach. I'm playing a full Bach suite.
You can still play it if it's Baroque?
Oh! I've heard that one before.
I bet you have. that would be part of the cutting room floor where we take it out. Yeah. Do you have to have special insurance for them?
I have, yes.
And I met a violinist at a local house concert who was with a quartet in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And he was ready to move on. But because of a patron of that quartet, he had a gazillion-dollar violin he was allowed to play.
Oh, yes.
If he left the quartet, he would leave the violin behind.
Mm-hmm.
Is that... Do you have stories of something like that with the lute?
Fortunately, lutes are not nearly as expensive as violins. Even the most expensive lute will tend to be under $10,000. And violins go into $1 million at times. So while lutes are more expensive than most of the guitars you'll see hanging at the Guitar Center, they're not ruinously expensive the way bowed string instruments can be.
Right. Would you, do you have another piece that you would like to play? Or?
Yes. Let me switch over to my other lute. Yes, I'll play just the beginning of a fantasy by John Dowland, who was perhaps Queen Elizabeth I's least favorite lutenist. She thought he was tremendously talented, but personally didn't like him very much.
Wow, that's, well, politics for hundreds of years.
There you go. And this is a piece of music called A Fancy, which means a fantasy, by John Dowland. Indeed.
So, that again is totally different.
Yes.
It's not, I think, what people would stereotypically expect from a lute. Composers of the 200, 400-year-ago vintage, were a lot of people writing for lute?
Yes. In fact, in the 16th century, 17th century, the lute was the most popular of all instruments. It was the cool instrument that teenagers wanted to learn.
Wow.
And second only to the human voice, it was the instrument that was most commonly found everywhere, especially in the emerging middle class of the Renaissance. People would get tutors for their children to learn, and they would have lessons every day. So that being said, a lot of energy and a lot of musical minds went into writing and performing on the lute. We have more than 50,000 pieces that have survived for the lute from the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries. It's one of the largest repertories for any instrument, second to the piano, definitely. But it's a... a tremendously large repertoire. It's tremendously varied as well, with a lot of different styles, a lot of different musical outlooks being expressed through the music. So that's my long answer of saying, yes, there's a lot of music.
And it's popular in many countries?
It was popular in Western European countries in particular. In England, in France, in Germany, it was, in Italy, certainly. It eventually spread to Central Europe and even into Russia by the 18th century. And also Scandinavian countries, such as Sweden, prized the lute and wrote for it.
And if I'm correct, like Japan, they're nutty for American baseball and banjo. So has the lute penetrated places like that?
It has. It did not back in the Renaissance and in 16th, 17th, 18th centuries.
Well, that was a closed society back then.
Right. But now, in the 20th and 21st centuries, with the resurgence of interest in music of the past and interest in the lute, yes, there are loads of Japanese lute players and lute builders and those writing for the music, writing music for the instrument.
So it has survived.
It has.
It's
sort of like the phoenix. It kind of died down right about the beginning of the 19th century. And with the resurgence of interest in old music, the end of the 19th and in all through the 20th century, you began to see the lute more and more with recreations of music of the past.
Any popular musicians that more in the you know the pop world, the Billboard, you know, once you get popular enough or I guess rich enough, then you can start doing what you want to do.
Right.
Any of these people said, I'm going to bring a lute in for one of my songs.
Sting had an album in 2006 of music of John Dowland, and he played a lute, and he brought in another lute player, and I think there's one piece by another composer, but it's otherwise an all Dowland album by a well-known rock star. I think it was called Songs from the Labyrinth or something along those lines.
Sounds very Stingish.
Yes, and it was probably the highest selling classical CD of that year.
Jeez. Has any lutist ever tried to do like Foggy Mountain Breakdown or The Devil Went Down to Georgia, you know, try to popularize?
You see a little of that from here and there. Most lute players got into the lute because of their interest in Renaissance and Baroque music. So there's perhaps less of that on the lute than you would have with a guitar. But yes, there are a lot of enterprising and adventurous lute players that will try their hand at that.
So I'm going to just assume that everyone watching and listening will want to know more about the lute and more about you, Ron McFarlane. Where would one go to find out more about you?
Well, I'm online.
Not that I've missed any question that could be asked.
My videos are all over YouTube. If you Google my name, Ron, that's R-O-N-N, Ron with two N's. McFarlane is M-C-F-A-R-L-A-N-E. I have a website, loads of YouTube videos, and
RonMcFarlane.com.
Yes, there is that as well.
Is Ron for Ronald?
It is, yes.
So Ronald with two N's.
It was not. No, I just decided back around 1970 or 71 that my name has two N's in it. I think it came from a time when people were messing with their names quite a lot. Jimi Hendrix was J-I-M-I. Debbie's were D-E-B-I or, you know, various things that people would do with their names. And for some reason, it suddenly occurred to me. It was the summer between high school and my first year in college. So that's actually a great time to transition and change any aspect of you. And that's a very small aspect, just the spelling.
Did you have to change legal records?
No, in fact, my name is still legally Ronald. But I just use Ron for all business.
Right. So when you sign autographs, it's R-O-N-N.
It is, and that's what the albums say. That's what it says on YouTube and my website.
You're just going to confuse all the people who
I'm trying to.
Well, Ron McFarlane, I want to thank you for taking the time to come up here to what I call Bronson Towers.
It's a pleasure. It's been a delight to talk with you.
Thank you. Anything that I've missed? Anything?
Not a thing. Parting words? Covered it very well.
Thanks. Great. Thank you. So for KUPR 99.9 in the beautiful high desert of Placitas, New Mexico, this has been the Matthew Bronson Show with lutist Ron McFarland. Check him out, ronmcfarland.com. I think you're going to enjoy it. Thank you. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.